Welcome to episode 35 of the Rescue Summer Mindset Podcast. I'm Cody Wright. This week's been pretty busy at the RSM headquarters in Boulder, Colorado. We've been kind of trying to knock, we got back from, you know, Wyoming, this climbing trip we did, Vince and I, last week. We've been, since then, basically like trying to knock out everything to do with the program Win the Summer that we're coming out with. So this new program, Win the Summer, if you don't know anything about it, it's basically like an 8-week program designed to increase your strength via, you know, weightlifting and calisthenics, and, you know, increase your cardio, your aerobic base via a lot of running and a lot of pool workouts. And this is kind of a program we are putting together as a kind of transition back into, you know, pools and gyms opening up. Although it seems like, depending on where you live in the country, some of those gyms and pools might be closing back down again. But if you're able to, you know, access a gym and pool, it's a great program. It's basically something like, it's what I've been doing, you know, because when all the gyms closed, I kind of like lost a little strength and a little bit of fitness. So I've been kind of getting back into it lately. So basically what I've been doing is a lot of strength training, trying to get my PT numbers back up. So what's in this program is pretty much what I do for my workouts. And I've had like really great numbers, or really great improvements in my PT numbers, you know, like specifically pull-ups. I was doing like, you know, like 7 to 10 pull-ups kind of like in the fall going into the winter last year. And then I started doing my strength training, specific types of exercises and workouts to do with improving those pull-ups and chin-up numbers. And I'm doing like 20 now. Push-ups, I was at like 60 to like 70. Now I'm doing like 80 to 90. So what I've been doing with strength training has been working. It's a lot of weightlifting and then a lot of, you know, calisthenic workouts kind of mixed in there, sprinkled in there. So this program is going to be cool. It's going to be a lot of strength training early on. And then as the weeks go by, you'll start to do more PT. And at the end, you'll be mostly doing PT with a little bit of strength. And Vince has kind of taken over the pool portion of all this training. So I'm covering the strength and running, specifically building your aerobic base and increasing your leg turnover. So that's going to translate to running a, you know, faster 1.5 to 3 mile time run for your PT test, depending on, you know, what school you're training for. So like I said, I'm doing that. Vince is doing all the pool stuff, so he's going to be doing the water confidence and all the pool workouts. And I think that's kind of cool because I've been riding the pool workouts since I started Rescue Summer Mindset, and it's nice to get a new person in here and write some pool workouts that are going to be a little different. It's going to be refreshing, I think, for you if you've bought any of my previous programs. This one's going to be, it's a combo, so it's going to have brand new pool workouts, and they're all kind of the stuff that Vince did while he was training. And he was a much better swimmer than me. He was in he was two classes behind me, and he's a great swimmer. He was one of the best swimmers in his class. So check out that program. I'll like put a link or something in the show notes, but you probably already know about it. That's coming out on Wednesday, by the way. So that's what we've been up to. This morning I snuck out and ran up a mountain in Colorado. I ran up Long's Peak. If you're familiar with it, it's like a 14,000 foot peak in Colorado. It took me like 4 hours. Pretty good day. Ended up doing that in the morning, got back at like 2, and then I started working on the Win the Summer program. Another cool thing we're kind of working on right now is a gear partnership with a company called ATAC Fitness. And basically it's pretty cool what they're doing. They're bundling up, you know, all the gear that you need to train for, you know, these kind of water-oriented military training. So he started the program specifically for, I think, for PJs. But basically what they do is they just sell bundled swimmer fins, they mask, snorkel, dive brick, stuff like that. So right now we're working on a partnership where you can kind of get like a discount code if you like go to their website and buy through them and then enter our code. So hopefully we'll have that kind of figured out next week, and we'll do an Instagram post. And once that's up, we'll have like a discount code, and you can go there and buy your gear. So if you need, you know, fins and you have mass snorkel, it even has like, you know, ropes so you can practice underwater knot tying. All that stuff is on there, and you'll be able to kind of use our discount code, and you'll get some money off your purchase. And for what I've been seeing, his prices are pretty good. I'm gonna do like a little a little analysis on it and see like how much money you could save if you go through ATAC Fitness, but that'll come, you know, next week. I got a pair of their fins sent to me like a month ago. I used them. They were great. They're great fins. They're cheaper and they're the same, pretty much the same quality as the fins you're going to be using in A School. So that's going to be a great partnership. And next week, you know, like I said, probably on the podcast, we'll do like a little like ad for it or something. And then you'll definitely see an Instagram post probably before that, just depending on when we release the podcast. All right. So I got a bunch of new questions this week and I'm just going to kind of run through them. A couple seem like kind of unique questions. So I will kind of roll through those. And then if I get sidetracked and start talking about something else, I'll just do that. So the first question was, what would you tell your youth audience if they wanted to become a rescue swimmer? So I'm going to say like people, you know, maybe 16 and under or like 17 and under, if you're still in high school, basically. I guess let's do this. If you're a senior in high school and you're planning on joining, you're probably like doing that process. But if you're like, you know, a freshman, sophomore, junior, or even a little bit younger, this is kind of my advice to you. And if you kind of want to go the route of being a rescue swimmer, you know, and you're thinking about, you know, joining right after high school or even right after college. So the first thing I would say is to play sports. So any sport that you're interested in, doesn't really matter. Just play a sport. Team sports are great because you kind of, you know, you learn those the basics of like working on a team, and that's going to come in handy, you know, in A School. And even when you get in your shop as a rescue swimmer, you want to be able to work well with people who are, you know, a lot of rescue swimmers are kind of like that A-type personality. So if, you know, a lot of athletes are kind of like that too. So if you kind of get used to working around and practicing and playing around those kind of people, it'll be a little more comfortable for you if you're not used to that already. And, you know, some good sports to play that I don't even think like my high school had this. Well, they definitely didn't have it, but I don't even know how many. Maybe if you're in like California, they might have this, or maybe Florida, but water polo. If you can play water polo, like sign up for that immediately. It's the best sport. I would say like that is the best sport to play to prepare you for swimmer school. Even more so, I think, than surfing. Like the top, like everyone I know who like became a rescue swimmer is either like a surfer, like on average is either a surfer or ex-water polo player. And in my experience, the water polo players are the best in the water because they're used to doing the egg beater kick all day. Like they can just tread water all day, and they're used to people, you know, pretty much like tackling them and like wrestling them in the water like the entire time they're playing the sport. I never played it growing up. I didn't even like think about it. But if you can find a way, you know, like maybe it's just like a rec league. I don't even know if they have those anywhere, but there's like a rec league or something like that. Just join it and play. Even if you suck, just get in the water, get used to people kind of tackling you and being out of breath in the water, egg beater kicks, all that is so great. Another good, you know, swimming is okay if you swim. I don't know a lot of people who like were on the swim team in high school that were swimmers or rescue swimmers, but I'm sure it could help you. I mean, you'll get faster for sure, but I don't think that one helps a ton. Not as much as you think it would, you know, because you're basically like in swimmer school, you're just doing the freestyle stroke, and that's so easy to learn. So you might like be a little bit faster than everyone else, but it's not going to help that much. I played in high school, I played baseball, I played golf. That's pretty much it. So, I mean, I didn't do a lot of sports, like the kind of sports you would expect, but I don't really think it matters too much as long as you're kind of, you know, working towards a goal. Like you don't want to be training in high school. You don't want to be like training specifically for rescue swimmer school all the time because you're going to kind of burn out. You just want to know, like, have that in the back of your head, but keep doing high school things like playing sports, all that. You can hit the pool and do some pool workouts for swimmer school. Like maybe if you buy one this summer, you know, you can hit the pool and do those workouts, do those land workouts, but don't like make it your your entire focus throughout high school, because you're just going to burn out. And you know, you might even halfway through high school decide to do something else, because in high school, you know, you like you find different passions and you change your mind a lot. So just keep in the back of your head, play sports, and you'll slowly develop that aerobic base that you need to kind of excel in swimmer school. I guess another thing I'd recommend is doing PT. You know, if you're not into weightlifting or you don't really know anyone's into it and you know nothing about it, it's probably not a good idea to like just go to the gym by yourself and just start lifting a bunch of weights. You'll probably get hurt. What you should do is start doing PT, you know, start doing push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, chin-ups, start running, you know. Just get your body used to those body weight exercises. So when you start getting a little older, you know, senior year, maybe like you just graduate, you're into college, your body's used to those PT, those calisthenic exercises, and you'll be able to kind of build on that and really get those numbers up for when you actually join. So that's my advice for the youth audience that listens to this podcast. I don't think there's a ton of people in that age range that listen to this podcast, just because from what I've been looking, I was looking at like the, you know, the analytics of the podcast. It's mostly like 18 to 25 year olds. So if you're in that small group of people, that's my advice. Just go ahead and go do it. All right, next question. How often do sprint downs underwater backs with no gear in A school? So if you don't know what that is, it's a pretty hard underwater drill that we do. So you basically sprint down 25 meters, go underwater, and you swim underwater back the 25 meters. I'm gonna take a sip of my coffee. All right. So I would say that's one of the harder just like drills they throw in there during like a pool workout. So, you know, a lot of times with pool workouts, the instructors will just be calling out exercises. So they'll be like, swim, you know, like 50 meters, sprint, go. And you just do a 50 meter sprint, come back. And then you just stand at attention, kind of waiting for the next drill. And they'll blurt out another thing, like maybe they'll blurt out underwater down, sprint back. So they're doing that. And then eventually, sometimes they'll yell, you know, sprint down, underwater back. So what that is, you know, I just explained it, sprint down. And, you know, you're pretty much sprinting. So you're like pretty tired by the time you get ready for that underwater. You get a big gulp of air and you just go. And by the time you get like halfway, you're like totally smoked and you're just kind of like powering through it. And it never gets easier. That's like one of the harder drills you can do. Even when you do it a lot, it doesn't really get easy because your heart rate's always up. So you're always just kind of like suffering through that. So the question was, you know, how often do you do that with no gear? And I would say not too often. You know, it's going to vary from instructor to instructor or just, you know, whatever portion of the training you're in. But I don't remember doing that drill a lot without gear. Maybe we did it early on. I don't even think we might have done it early on like a few times, but normally, you know, when you're doing pool workouts after the first couple of weeks, you're pretty much always in fins and gear. So doing that, it sucks, but when you're in gear, it's not so bad, you know? So I would say be able to do it without gear, but don't stress about it. That's just one of those things you're gonna have to suffer through when you get there. There's no real way to prepare for it too much, you know, because your heart rate's always gonna be up no matter what, because you're sprinting. All right. Next question is, what is the one thing most people don't know about A school, so rescue swimmer school, that you wish you knew? And this is actually like, I guess, good news if you didn't know this for me or for you guys. But when I got there, but kind of before I got, when I was getting ready for training and I was like asking around, I found out that the schedule in swimmer school is pretty great. So you're in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, so you're like an hour from the Outer Banks, which is a pretty nice beach. And it's nothing like the Outer Banks show on Netflix, but it's probably better, you know. It's not like kind of crazy with those like cliques and stuff. So like you're an hour from that. So if you go in the summer, you kind of like hang out on the beach on the weekends, and you get every weekend off, you know. You do like a little you stand a little bit of duty. So like I think one person from your class has to be like a driver. So he or she will just stay on base and they'll do like, you know, they'll pick people up from like the bar and stuff on the weekends, or they'll also go, if there's classes coming in, they'll drive to the airport and pick up people kind of flying in. I think the airport's in Norfolk, so people that are flying in for A school, you can go pick them up. So there's like one person doing that per week. So like really like no duty. So every weekend you can kind of, if you're in the summer, you know, you go to the beach every weekend, hang out, you pretty much hang out with your class. There's not a lot of like good surf in the summer, but every once in a while there is. So you might get some surfing, you know, like eat some good food, and then, you know, you can drive every night. You can just drive back, or you can like get a house there, like a hotel if you want. Although probably not right now because COVID. Maybe you can, I don't know. In the winter, don't really know how it is there. I didn't go through in the winter, but it's cold. I know there's like pretty good surf in the fall and winter there, so that actually, if you're a surfer, that might be better for you. And the beaches will be less crowded. What else? Let's see. Yeah, so the schedule, it's great. You get weekends off. During the week, you know, you're pretty much going like, I forget the exact hours, but it's like approximately like, you know, like 6:30 to like 4. That's like kind of the work day, if you will. You know, basically you're working out the whole time. But you have like roughly 8 to 10 hour day where you're working out, and then you get the nights off. So you're just at home or in your barracks room every night. You're kind of hanging out with your crew, watching TV. You can like eat dinner. A lot of people go off base and eat like a second dinner. We would always like eat in the galley, and then typically, you know, you eat in the galley at like right after you get out of training. So you go eat, and then you kind of like hang out, watch TV for a little bit, and then we'd like go back out and like get Chick-fil-A or like Little Caesars or something, and just like eat a bunch more and then go to bed. That's pretty much how it goes. So the schedule is pretty nice. You know, you're pretty much doing Monday through Friday, weekends off. It's somewhat nice. I actually liked it more than boot camp, because boot camp, you know, you're pretty much on for 8 weeks straight. Even though it's not hard, like mentally it's just annoying in boot camp. You know, you just have to like, you get out of shape. If you're training for like swimmer school, you know, you're in really good shape. You go to boot camp and you're kind of working to the average of someone in that class. So you're going to lose fitness. You're probably going to gain a little bit of weight, and you just got to deal with that and kind of just suffer through it. But you don't get weekends off and stuff, so you're always on. You know, someone's always yelling at you. It's not really fun. So I enjoyed Rescue Summer School more than I enjoyed boot camp. Even though it was way harder and more stressful, it was a better time. All right, so next question. What's the most important lesson you learned going through A school? So I guess like the cliche answer, and this is actually, even though it's cliche, I would say it's really true. And it's one of those things you don't really know until you actually do something that is going to test this. So you don't actually know what your like physical and mental limit is until you get into training. And I'm going to talk a little bit about another kind of concept I like in the next, I think it's like the next question down. And this will kind of relate back to this. But yeah, you don't actually know your limit until you really get into training and have to actually, you know, find that line. And sometimes you don't even find it. Like, I would say, you know, I went through swimmer school, but my limit is probably like, I probably never actually got to it, you know, like, because it's hard to say if you really got there, because if you're actually at the limit, like, you wouldn't know, you know, you have no way of telling. Like, maybe you could go more, but you didn't think you could. So you don't know your limits. You get to school and if you have like a lower bound, you know, like a lower limit, you're going to find out pretty fast and you'll probably fail. But you don't really know until you get there. So the antidote to that is just training, you know, just train a lot. And hopefully when you get there, you're able to really push your physical and mental limits and kind of get close to your limit and hopefully pass. You know, hopefully that limit is good enough. Another good thing, you know, and this is a lesson I learned, and I use it today now. I use it for, you know, college. I use it for working on projects that I do, you know, for my businesses and stuff. It's called segmenting, but you break up everything into big tasks and little tasks. So I did a cool like blog post on that. I'm gonna try to pull it up real quick. I did the blog post. I think it was my most recent one. Let me pull it up and kind of read through real quick. But it's segmenting. So all you're doing is breaking down like a big goal into a little goal. So in the write-up, I talked about, you know, how swimmer school is pretty intimidating when you think about it, because it's like, you know, 4 to 6 months of like nonstop training. And if you kind of think about it, you know, in the grand scheme, it's going to really like overwhelm your emotions, and like you might get stressed out, and that's just going to kind of wear on your system and make you not perform as well. So here's what I kind of wrote. If you approach Rescue Swimmer School while focusing on the duration of the day, you're going to fail. It can even be hard mentally to comprehend what you're going to have to do in a day, let alone a week. Rather than trying to wrap your brain around these long periods of time, just think about the next training session or even just the next exercise. If you approach training with this mentality, you're more likely to get through it and preserve your sanity. So, you know, you're just, and I talked about this before, and I think every person on the internet that talks about any of these trainings has like harped it enough to where I'm sure you know about it, and I'm sure it's like basically obvious to you. But you know, you're just like, breaking everything up into little tasks, and you can relate that back to like doing a schoolwork or like maybe writing a paper for college. But you know, if you think about like writing a 10-page paper, kind of sucks, you know. But you just segment it down, you know. You're like, you have one page that you got to write, you know, before maybe you take a break and like go get some coffee or go eat dinner. So you write that page, got a page done, you do your thing, come back, do the next page. You know, you're just segmenting it down, and eventually you get to 10 pages. That's like a super like cheesy example, you know, but it really is true though. If you take any big task and just break it down into little like bite-sized chunks, you can get through it. And that's really worked well for me for everything I've done in my life up to this point. So try to use that. All right, so then the next question is overcoming self-doubt and fear of failure while training. So this one, you know, is pretty obvious also. Everyone's stressed out about getting through school, and no one really knows whether they're going to, you know, pass. Even when you get there, you're like, you like in your head, you think you have a good idea that you can pass, but you really don't know. And when I saw that question, I was trying to think of ways to explain kind of some way to get over it. And it's hard to, because I can't really think of what I could say that would ease that fear in someone's mind, because everyone has it, and that's just something you kind of have to deal with when you're going through this kind of training, because it's a big sacrifice. You know, you got to join the military, you're committing a certain like 4 to 6 years of your life, and a lot of times people who apply for these jobs, like, you're probably this way, you don't really have another job in mind, you're just thinking about doing this one job, and if you fail, that's going to be pretty hard to take. So naturally, that whole fear of failure, you know, self-doubt does become a huge factor, and people who can deal with that and still like train and persist are the ones who pass. So this is my kind of analogy that I came up for this, and I don't think it even helps get over this fear of failure or self-doubt, but it's a way to think about it. So I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Interstellar, but even if you haven't, think about like the concept of, you know, a black hole. So, you know, a black hole is this really dense area of matter in space that is so dense, the second you like cross over this like certain point going into it, no one can see, like, it just eats up all the light. So if you're standing on the outside of that black hole, you know, you can't see what went in, or maybe you can. I'm not going to be like precise, you know, in my description of a black hole, but this is just kind of an analogy. So, you know, the person on the outside sees the thing go into the black hole, it disappears. The thing going into the black hole also doesn't know what's in there until it actually gets in there, you know? So, you know, like an astronaut, these astronauts spend this time prepping for this mission to go into a black hole. And they're on Earth, you know, and they have to, you know, work with, we'll say SpaceX. So they're working with SpaceX, they want to be the first crew to go into a black hole. And, you know, maybe report back, even though that's impossible. But they're getting this whole, you know, they got to train on Earth. You know, they're going through all their fitness routines. They're doing all their science, their research. They're training for years and years for this trip to the black hole. But, you know, no one really knows what's in a black hole. So the whole time they're training, they're just like going through the motion. Not going through the motions, but like really training hard and giving it their best, you know. Like they're training at, they're the best of the best, they're training 100%, and they finally get ready to go, and this entire time, you know, they have this mission to get to the black hole, but they don't really know what's on the other side of that black hole, but the second they get to it and get inside, they'll know. That's kind of how, you know, training for a stormer school is. Like, you're going to train for this big mission, and you're going to eventually have the opportunity to go there and find out what it's actually about. And there's no real way to tell how you're going to react until you get to that training, you know, like till you get to the black hole. So you just have to deal with that. You just got to know that that's something that everyone deals with. And there's not one person who was training for swimmer school or any of these programs that knew how they were going to react to, you know, this big whatever. If you're like in swimmer school, it's like the one-man test. They didn't really know how they're going to react to the one-man test until they actually did it. And that's the same for every single person who's ever gone through the training. So it's not going to be any different with you. And there's no reason to really like stress about it and think about it, because that's just part of the game, you know. So if that analogy made any sense, you know, just keep it in the back of your mind. If it didn't, just throw it away. I'm not really sure. I didn't really vet that one. I just kind of thought of it and decided to throw it into the podcast. So hopefully it helped out. If not, just toss it out of your mental basket, you know. All right, so next question. How soon do you use equipment at A school? So they're talking about like gear. So, you know, like, you know, you wear like a Triton, you wear like that. It's basically a vest with a bunch of pockets that has, you know, a knife and stuff in it, but it's just completely empty for summer school. So you wear that, you wear fins, you know, you wear a mask in summer school. You pretty much start using that immediately. I think you get your equipment like within the first few days of school and you start using, they teach you how to hold it, how to put it on. There's a specific way they want you to put it on, how to like take it off and hold it and all that stuff. So they teach you how to do all that and you immediately start using it. Because, you know, as a rescue swimmer in the fleet, you're pretty much, I mean, you're always wearing gear. So they want you to be really proficient at using the gear and just being like, it becomes just an extension of your body. So you use it a lot. You probably like even are doing, maybe like the second pool, the day you're in the pool, second day you're in the pool, you're already doing gear swims. All right, another question. How can I increase my lung capacity for holding my breath underwater? This one's pretty obvious. We made an entire course on holding your breath. It's called How to Hold Your Breath Like a Rescue Swimmer. And Vince basically like went through this series of freediving courses, and he's already just a good swimmer. And he's got a pretty like, he can hold his breath pretty long. So he knows a lot about, you know, like the physiology behind it and how to train, how to increase your lung capacity. And he made a whole course on it. It's called, you know, How to Hold Your Breath Like a Rescue Swimmer. I'll put the link in the show notes. Go check it out. That course really works. I've gotten some really great feedback on that. And I mean, I don't think there's anything else out there that, you know, there's literally no other program designed to help you increase your lung capacity specifically for these military trainings. So it's kind of an expensive course, and I get that. Like, we're in like a weird time. You probably don't have a job right now, like, or maybe you got fired, but the course is, you know, $200. And if you have the money and you're serious about this training, I highly recommend you get that course. And if you have any questions about it, just, you know, send us an email, rsmguide@gmail.com, or just send me a DM on Instagram and we will try to answer your questions about the course. That is the end of the questions for today's episode. And that's pretty much all I have to talk about. A couple of last second things, you know, if you enjoy the podcast, go to Apple podcast page, leave a rating and review. Those are awesome. We've gotten pretty much 5-star reviews the whole way through. If you are feeling kind of generous, we have a podcast donation page where you can kind of designate an amount of money you want to just donate to the podcast. And what we do is we donate 20%. Let me double check. So we donate 20% to the Coast Guard Foundation. So there's this little, like, you'll go to the link. It's in the main page on rsmguide.com. Or it's not rsmguide anymore. We changed it to rescuesummermindset.com now. So you go to rescuesummermindset.com. You go up to the bar on the top of the page. There's a donations page. You can kind of read through there's like a little write-up that I put together. And then at the bottom, you can decide to donate a certain amount. So there's like five up to like $200 for a donation. And what we do is we donate 20% to the Coast Guard Foundation, and the rest of it, we're just going to dump all of that money into improving the podcast. So it's going to be better equipment, money for bringing other people on. So we want to bring in guests, a lot of like rescue swimmers. We want to bring on and talk about some stories, some rescues, and kind of their training and their upbringing and how they got through school. So that's coming in the future, but we do have to, like, that takes money, you know. So if you're feeling generous, donate to the podcast and know that that's going to go 100% towards, well, 20% towards donations for the Coast Guard Foundation, and the rest, 80% of the money, is going to go towards improving the podcast. And like I said, as with everything else, there's going to be a link in the show notes, or you can just go to rescuesummermindset.com and check that out. Obviously, when the summer program, I talked about it at the beginning of the podcast, is coming out on Wednesday. I believe that's the 22nd. So if you're ready for that training, buy it and get ready to get to work. What I'm going to do is just email. If you bought it, I'm going to send an email to everyone who bought it, and they're going to get the program, both the beginner and the advanced. So you get 2 8-week programs for a total of 16 weeks. And then I'll also email the ebook of the Rise Consumer Mindset. And you also get, I think I'm also put in my old summer program from last year called the Immersion Program. So if you pre-order, you know, you're going to get all that stuff, and I'll just email it to you. With that said, I'm going to end the episode. I'll talk to you all next week.